Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, November 30th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Mahomet Man Buys Delavan Armory, Distribution Center Planned for Facility, by Kevin Barlow. Delavan. While still disappointed, the National Guard has left Delavan. The mayor said she's thrilled a Mahomet businessman has bought the local armory for use as a distribution center. We are certainly happy that it is sold, but we are still in mourning that the guard has left, Liz Skinner said. But a new business is coming in and the building's integrity will be maintained. That's great news for Delavan. Matt Underwood of Mahomet said he plans to use the armory as a distribution center for his industrial equipment dealership. He has already switched the name from Swarm 3D to Armory Industrial. Illinois Army National Guard officials said the bid of $27,351 was accepted in August, and court documents indicate the sale is being finalized. The building remains vacant. We buy and sell used industrial equipment, Underwood said. We do well enough and do most of our business on eBay, Craigslist, and Amazon. We were looking for a bigger place, and this just seemed ideal because it is in a good location and it's got enough space. Underwood said the 28,000-square-foot armory, which was built in 1938, is perfect for his needs, although he may want to add a truck dock at some point. We get a lot of things in on huge semi-trucks, and everything goes out piecemeal, he said. But we love the building because there is a lot of office space and a lot of restrooms. It gives us some flexibility, and in the future, we may want to lease some of it out, he added. It is also centrally located with good access to Interstate I-55, which gets you onto Interstate 55. From there, you can head toward St. Louis or Chicago. Underwood describes his company as a mom-and-pop operation. We don't have any full-time employees yet, but the key to growing is to have space where you can do business, and this is a big step toward that, he said. We hire temporary workers when we need extra help. In February 2016, Guard officials announced they were considering closing the facility that housed the 1144th Transportation Motor Transport Battalion. The announcement came as part of the Army's 202 redesign plan, designed to modernize facilities across the country, and officials said the armory would need $3 million to $5 million in updates to continue in military use. Colonel Craig Holan previously told local officials the armory annually cost the National Guard about $20,000 in utilities and $15,000 in general maintenance. In December 2016, the unit was deactivated during a closing ceremony, and Skinner and a handful of Delavan officials worked to find a tenant for the building. Both Skinner and Underwood say the building remains in good shape. It has been taken care of and is in good shape for its age, Skinner said. We are just happy to have someone who will be as concerned about the building as we were. The next story is headlined, Lutheran Center Steeple Born of Crash Aftermath. Wittenberg Increases Visibility with Addition After Accident in April. By Lenore Sabota. Normal. A steeple topped by a cross now graces the Wittenberg Lutheran Center on South Main Street near College Avenue, giving greater visibility to the campus ministry near Illinois State University. But it might not have been there if not for an accident in April that could have been tragic. When Wittenberg's pastor, the Reverend Bill Jensen, saw the extensive damage caused when a car crashed into the building, his first concern was for the driver, who, police said, was going more than 90 miles per hour. He was thankful to learn the motorist was not badly hurt and that no students were in the kitchen when the car plowed through the brick wall and through a brick storage shed at 3 a.m. The motorist, who was charged with multiple criminal and traffic offenses, just missed hitting a utility pole, which Jensen said might have saved the building, but probably would have killed the driver. His next concern was how to repair the building, and, if possible, have some good come out of the incident. "Leave it to God to be able to put something back together better than it was before," said Jensen. "We have a lot to be thankful for." Almost immediately, people contacted him asking how they could help. The combination of insurance money and donations allowed Jensen to not only repair the damage to the building and replace the contents of the kitchen, but also add a long-desired steeple and cross. On December 10th, the center will have a dedication ceremony celebrating completion of renovations and the tower project. The 30-foot-tall tower with the steeple and cross will be dedicated in remembrance of the Reverend Robert Lang, campus pastor at Wittenberg from 1977 to 1991, who died in July. Members of Lang's family are expected to attend, along with former students and Lang's former secretary. "It's kind of a reunion of sorts," Jensen said. He hopes the addition will make us more visible and more identified as a chapel than before. So does ISU senior Samuel Bishop, who attends services at Wittenberg. Bishop said people sometimes thought the center was a campus building or a bank. "There's no better way to say you're a religious building than having a steeple and cross," said the chemistry major from Marquette Heights. About 70 students are served by the campus ministry, attending Sunday services, midweek chapel services, or Bible study classes, or just hanging out, said Jensen. "The whole purpose of our being here is to be a home away from home," he said. The accident occurred shortly before finals week at ISU, and Jensen said students often studied there late at night, knowing they could make hot chocolate or throw a pizza in the oven. ISU sophomore Hannah Einfeld of Bourbonnais, an early childhood education major, often studies there. "Pastor Bill and his wife Cindy are amazing people and will help you in any way possible," she said. Bishop said, "When I'm not in class, I'm usually here. It's quiet here and you can get a lot of homework done." He said, "Having a church home is important. It's a blessing that this building is here." Serving as a general contractor on such a major project might be a daunting task for most ministers. It's not a skill usually taught in seminaries. But before becoming a minister, Jensen worked for nearly 20 years as a project manager for a Springfield construction company. "Maybe that's why God put me here," said Jensen, who has been at Wittenberg since 2009. And a sidebar tells us, if you go, the special dedication service will be part of the regular Sunday Divine Service at 10:30 a.m. December 10th. The Reverend Marcus Zill, National Director of Campus Ministries for Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, will assist with the service. A luncheon will follow. Those planning to attend the luncheon should call 309-452-5971. The next story is entitled Ceremony for AIDS Day, Tree Lighting Event to Commemorate Loved Ones, by Paul Sweech. Bloomington. McLean County residents may welcome the holiday season on Friday while remembering people whose lives have been touched by HIV/AIDS. A tree lighting ceremony to commemorate World AIDS Day will be at 4 p.m. Friday outside Hy-Vee, 1403 North Veterans Parkway, Bloomington. The ceremony, sponsored by the McLean County Health Department with Central Illinois Friends and Prairie Pride Coalition, will include speakers impacted by HIV. Red ribbons, an international symbol of AIDS awareness and support for people with HIV, will be available for people to place on the tree or to wear, said Lisa Slater, Health Department Public Health Communications Specialist. Following the ceremony, attendees will be invited to the Bistro, 316 North Main Street, Bloomington, where information will be available about local health resources and testing options, Slater said. While World AIDS Day has been observed on December 1st for several years, the Health Department decided to mark the day this year at a high-traffic location to send the message that the story of HIV and AIDS isn't over, Slater said. More responsible behavior and better medicines are contributing to fewer people dying of HIV complications and more people living with HIV as a chronic disease. But HIV prevalence is increasing among people ages 20 through 25 who didn't come of age when more Americans were dying of HIV/AIDS and who are more likely to engage in risky sexual activity that puts them at greater risk of disease, said Melissa Graven, Health Department Communicable Disease Supervisor. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, as of June 30th, 89 McLean County residents were living with HIV and 86 were living with AIDS. Statewide, 19,058 people were living with HIV and 19,481 were living with AIDS. HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, attacks white blood cells that protect against illness and can lead to AIDS, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, a disease that weakens the immune system so the body can't fight off potentially fatal infections. HIV is found in the bodily fluids of infected people and may be spread by having sex with an HIV-infected person or by sharing needles or injection equipment with an infectious person. An HIV-infected woman may transmit it to her baby during pregnancy or when breastfeeding. When people say they don't know someone with HIV/AIDS, I tell them, you don't know whether you know someone with HIV/AIDS. People don't want to talk about it. Slater said, I believe in this day and age, there is little that is truly someone else's problem. We are all so interconnected. This event is an opportunity for the community to come together. And Box tells us help is available. McLean County Health Department works to prevent and control the spread of HIV/AIDS in McLean County with counseling, testing, education, and outreach. For more information, call 309-888-5435 or visit www.mcleancountyill.gov/health. Here's an article entitled, Raul Hopes to be Bipartisan Attorney General, by Derek Bay. Bloomington. Kwame Raul still remembers what Barack Obama told him after Raul was appointed as his successor in the Illinois Senate. Spend some time speaking and getting to know people from other parts of the state. Learn about your differences without letting it divide you, Raul recalled. I took that advice to heart, and that's why I've been able to work on a bipartisan basis on a lot of fronts. Raul, now a 13-year state senator, wants to keep that approach if elected as the state's next attorney general next fall. The Chicago attorney is one of several candidates vying to succeed fellow Democrat Lisa Madigan, who will retire as attorney general after four terms. The attorney general can't afford to be a partisan. I haven't run away from difficult tasks, and I've been able to garner bipartisan support for things we had to do as a state, Raul said during an interview Wednesday at the Pantograph. There's more than just looking at what Kwame Raul says he will do as attorney general. You can look at what Kwame Raul has done as a state senator, and not just casting a vote, being the lead sponsor. Raul touted his work on employee rights, protecting victims of sexual assault, including on college campuses, and preventing domestic violence. He's also advocated for criminal justice reform, voting rights, and the federal Affordable Care Act. I sponsored legislation that made sure Illinois could fully take advantage of the Affordable Care Act, he said. I think about it personally because my access to health care allows me to sit with you today. I was diagnosed last year with prostate cancer, and having access to health care allowed me to confront my ailment. Rao said he hopes to continue some Madigan initiatives, including protecting consumers, fighting opioid abuse, and pushing back directly against the Trump administration, as Madigan's office did Wednesday by joining 15 other state attorneys general to fight the latest travel ban order. Rao also sees opportunities for improvement, however. He hopes to make it easier for employees to file complaints about companies that treat them illegally, push harder for criminal justice reform, enable the Public Access Counselor to handle more Freedom of Information Act requests, and fund trauma recovery centers that aim to disrupt the cycle of gun violence. You have victims beyond the direct victim, kids who, if you go into some elementary schools and you ask them, "Do you know somebody who's been shot?" these hands go up. That's trauma, and it's untreated, said Rao. Other candidates for Attorney General include Republican Erica Harold, an Urbana attorney, and four Democrats, State Representative Scott Drury of Highwood, former Federal Prosecutor Renato Mariotti of Chicago, former Governor Pat Quinn of Chicago, and Highland Park Mayor Nancy Rotering. The next story is headlined, "Giving Tuesday Tops $500,000. By Lenore Sabota. Normal. Although this year's Giving Tuesday fundraising totals fell short of 2016, Illinois State University officials saw several reasons to celebrate. ISU received 1,473 gifts, totaling $525,496, down from 1,670 gifts totaling $593,936 last year. "We are excited to report another year of exceeding $500,000, said Laura Way, Executive Director of Annual Giving at ISU. Giving Tuesday also brought donations to other schools in the area. Tuesday helped push the number of new donors to ISU since it began its Redbirds Rising fundraising campaign in July 2013, past the 15,000 mark, she said. That comprehensive campaign, the second in the school's history, seeks to raise $150 million. Money from Giving Tuesday also went to ISU's two laboratory schools, University High School and Metcalf Elementary School, as well as its public radio station, WGLT. Way said this year's campaign had a broader reach, with many donation options offered so people could direct their gifts to their areas of interest. She singled out the School of Communication and the Division of Student Affairs for their efforts to involve alumni, students, advisory boards, and others in Giving Tuesday. Heartland Community College raised $4,200 on Giving Tuesday, according to Chris Downing, Executive Director of Development at Heartland. He said the money would go toward student scholarships to be awarded this spring. "For us, it was not about the number of dollars, but getting more to participate," he said. "We see this as an opportunity for engagement." An anonymous donor issued a challenge to donate 500 people if 25 people donated to Heartland by noon, and another $500 if 25 more people donated by 5 p.m. Both challenges were met with a total of 51 donations by 5 p.m., said Downing. "We know how important Giving Tuesday is for a lot of charities out there," said Downing, who was pleased by the support others received, too. "It's a reflection of how compassionate our community can be." Lincoln College raised $47,000 from 88 donors for its unrestricted Lincoln Fund, as part of Giving Tuesday, according to Deb Ackerman, Vice President for Institutional Advancement. Those donations will be matched by Lincoln College alumnus and board member Jeffrey Swallow, who is matching up to $100,000 in donations to the Lincoln Fund through the end of the year. Ackerman said, "We were thrilled with what was received on Giving Tuesday, even though the college did not make a major push. The college is planning its own Giving Day early next year as part of an $8 million campaign announced in August with the theme, Embracing Our Past, Empowering Our Future." Illinois Wesleyan University concentrates its major fundraising push on All In for Wesleyan each April, rather than Giving Tuesday. However, spokesman John Twork said IWU saw a significant increase in online donations from alumni, parents, and friends of the university on Giving Tuesday. Here's a story entitled Renner to Host Town Hall Meetings in December by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. Mayor Terry Renner will seek public input at 3 town hall meetings in December on a variety of topics. While there will be no formal agenda, I will give a brief, high-level update from the mayor's perspective on a range of recent and upcoming items of note, such as the city's budget, said the mayor in a news release. However, my primary goal is to hear from and engage with Bloomington constituents whose ideas and feedback are so vital to the city's operation, he added. The meetings will be December 5th at the YWCA McLean County, December 12th at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and December 20th at Miller Park Pavilion. Each meeting will be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. We take transparency seriously in Bloomington, having received a 100% transparency score from the Illinois Policy Institute, and I'm very proud of that, Renner said. However, as far as I'm concerned, we can always do even more to reach out to our residents and get them engaged. Renner already hosts an hour-long open house with residents on each Friday before City Council voting sessions, which are on the second and fourth Mondays. But Renner changed the format effective October 6th, saying he wanted to give residents more individual attention in addressing their issues. Instead of meeting as a group in the Fishbowl conference room in front of the council chambers at City Hall, anyone wanting to meet with the mayor has to sign up for a 5 or 10 minute individual appointment. And here is some Illinois State news in an article entitled Lawmakers Seek Info on Medicaid Contract by John O'Connor. Springfield. Governor Bruce Rauner's administration says a $60 billion package to provide health care to millions of low-income Illinois residents will save $1 billion over current expenses, while critics deride it as a stealth deal that they say is costing more than they expected. The administration agreed to a 4-year, roughly $15 billion annual contract with 7 managed care organizations that will handle Medicaid coverage for 2.7 million Illinois residents beginning January 1st. Rauner's administration predicts savings of up to $300 million a year, largely because insurers have agreed to accept lower payments from the state. But lawmakers of both parties have complained about the procurement process that led to the deal. Representative Greg Harris of Chicago, the House Democrats' budget expert, will conduct a hearing Thursday in Chicago to get answers about the deal and a side contract that the Department of Health Care and Family Services signed with a consultant to shepherd the pact. The annual contract with the managed care organizations will cost the state 43% more than the $10.5 billion Illinois currently pays for Medicaid. But John Hoffman, spokesman for the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, points out that the program will cover 800,000 more people. This transformation will offer quality care to vulnerable residents while ensuring sustainable costs for taxpayers, Hoffman said. The plan will shift administration of health care from the state to private insurers. The administration contends that will lower medical costs because private insurers focus more on prevention. The state's program, called Health Choice Illinois, will cover nearly 90% of the state's 3.1 million residents eligible for Medicaid. Putting more Medicaid clients in managed care coverage was the aim of a 2011 state law. While lawmakers have complained that the contract wasn't done through the standard bidding process, the Department of Health Care and Family Services insists the process was competitive and transparent, and that the agency utilized the purchase of care procedure that's been used for decades for such contracts. Although bids were not required, the agency solicited them from contractors seeking the work, Hoffman said. Critics, including Democratic controller Susana Mendoza, say they hadn't expected the contract to cost as much as it did. She said in a statement that Rauner should have followed an open and transparent review. He refused, and we are now saddled with a massive stealth deal with an outrageous price tag. Hoffman said Healthcare and Family Services Director Felicia Norwood had never provided a cost estimate. Last spring, House Democrats used the impending deal as leverage in their budget negotiations with Rauner. In exchange for business practice changes the GOP governor had long demanded, Democrats insisted on a traditional procurement process for the managed care agreement. Negotiations went by the wayside, however, when Democrats who control the General Assembly adopted an income tax increase and an annual budget over Rauner's vetoes. Conservative Representative David McSweeney is interested in the answers, too. And here are some public safety items by Pantograph staff. Armed robbery. A 17-year-old boy was arrested after allegedly using a gun to rob someone selling him a cell phone Wednesday in the 3000 block of East Washington Street. Police said the victim and suspect arranged the sale online. Police said the suspect approached the victim about 1:24 p.m. at the designated meeting spot, displayed a gun, took the cell phone, and ran. There were no injuries. Police located a suspect matching the robber's description nearby a short time later. The boy was arrested and taken to the McLean County Juvenile Detention Center on an initial charge of armed robbery, and the phone was recovered. The U.S. Marshals Task Force and McLean County Sheriff's Department assisted with the investigation. The BPD has offered the use of its front parking lot to people buying and selling goods through online marketplaces to help ensure safe transactions. And another public safety item is fatal crash. A 23-year-old Urbana man died in a single-vehicle crash near Paxton on Tuesday afternoon. Illinois State Police said Angel L. Pies, 23, was driving a 2001 Pontiac Grand Prix west on Illinois 9 at 2380 East Road about 12:17 p.m. when the car left the roadway and overturned several times, ejecting him. He was pronounced dead at the scene by the Ford County coroner, Doug Wallace. The crash was about a mile east of Paxton. The investigation into the crash continues, police said. And here's an item from today's Daily Digest entitled, Minier Sets Christmas Parade. Minier. The Minier Christmas Parade, an annual event for at least 90 years, will step off at 2 p.m. Saturday on Main Street in front of the IGA store, proceed 7 blocks down Main Street, and conclude at Chicago Street. In recognition of Minier's 150th anniversary, local historian John Thompson will portray the town's founder, the Reverend George Minier, in the parade, said parade coordinator Carolyn Hansen of the Olympia Kiwanis Club, which sponsors the parade. The parade also will include first responders, the Olympia High School Marching Band, and Santa Claus, who will meet children in the firehouse after the parade. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for November 30th. Please stay tuned.